From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, telekinesis. Split show for you. Here's what's happening. Hurricane Arthur growing into a Category 2 storm now. Vacationers hunkering down in hotels along the North Carolina coast, all because of Arthur. The storm was getting more dangerous as it is now developing an inner eye wall. The smaller the eye, the stronger the winds. Hurricane Arthur bearing down on Morehead City, which is a very popular vacation site for the 4th of July. That is going to be a disaster for people in that area. I've got some friends flying down that way, keeping my fingers crossed for them. Massive injections of wastewater from the oil and gas industry called fracking likely to have triggered a sharp rise in earthquakes in the state of Oklahoma. Researchers say that there's been a 40-fold increase, 40, in the rate of quakes in the United States, and that state specifically, between 2008 and 2013. The scientists found that the disposal of water in four high-volume wells could be responsible for a swarm of tremors. There's been an increasing evidence of links between the process of oil and gas extraction and earthquakes in states like Arkansas, Texas, Ohio, and Oklahoma in recent years. Wall Street, they started their fireworks early, the Dow rallying past $17,000. For the first time in history, as traders cheered a strong jobs report. Let's hope it keeps up. An Ohio man has pleaded guilty to federal charges that he collected more than $230,000 in Social Security benefits intended for his mother for 33 years after she died. Subaru recalling 660,000 vehicles. The recall covers vehicles that are currently or have been registered in what Subaru calls the 20 salt belt states, where salt is used to melt ice and snow in the winter months. It's affecting the brake lines in some of these vehicles, running the risk of corrosion that may affect the driver's obvious ability to stop the car. Europe's Rosetta spacecraft is edging ever closer to its quarry, the 4-kilometer-wide comet. Thursday's separation is just 43,000 kilometers away, and the narrowing gap is evident in the probe's latest photos. It's an incredible story there. Older people who have trouble getting around because of poor blood flow to their legs may be able to walk a little longer and farther after eating dark chocolate, according to a study in Italy. People with artery disease who ate a dark chocolate bar were able to slightly increase the time and distance that they walked a couple of hours later compared to people who ate milk chocolate. Big difference there. So you want the dark chocolate. More than 99% of the drug trials for Alzheimer's disease during the past decade have failed, according to a study. There is an urgent need to increase the number of potential therapies being investigated, say U.S. scientists. Let's check in with author and researcher Christian Wild on this one. Well, I have a feeling you, who have studied Alzheimer's disease, Christian, knew that these therapies weren't working.
Well, that's kind of interesting, George. We reported to Coast listeners almost 4 years ago that the class of drugs approved for Alzheimer's and dementia was already disappointing physicians, but that is all that was available and is available, as this article designates. The approved drugs are Aricept, Razadine, Namenda, Exelon, and Florisan, which incidentally initially looked like it was going to be the king of all of them, but it too has failed and gone by the wayside. All of these drugs are acetylcholine inhibitors made from the amino acid. I would imagine, George, all of us have probably wondered if Alzheimer's disease is an unexpected or unavoidable normal part of the aging process.
You would think. You don't know.
As we're living longer. I don't think for your case. I think you're going to be as sharp as you are today. But the good news is that it would be an incorrect assumption. Haven't we all known someone like my dear friend Mario, who turned 89 yesterday, who I have never once seen hesitate for a word or have a senior moment or not be able to recall a fact or a name? His mind, as many people his age and older, remains as sharp as it was 30 years ago. Now, we've been reading recently that pharmaceutical companies are already in the pipeline with new drugs for Alzheimer's made from turmeric, having recognized turmeric's ability to keep the beta amyloid plaques and fibrous tangles from forming, which is the actual cause of Alzheimer's disease, and to dissolve them once they have formed. A whole lot of information on Alzheimer's and what you can do to prevent it, including several new recognized contributing factors that are controllable that most doctors may not yet be aware of, or on the site for anybody who wants to see it. Advice from the Alzheimer's Association for taking care of loved ones, valuable information. Now, can this single spice provide part or all of the answer? Gregory Cole of UCLA's Geffen School of Medicine, a researcher who has long been aware of India's historic low number of Alzheimer's and dementia cases, and outspoken on the lack of success with the approved drugs, said, and I quote, "There is need for better and safer drugs to treat Alzheimer's and dementia. If it is not turmeric, we need something like turmeric, something cheap and effective with a long history and no side effects."
Thank you, Christian. You have yourself a great 4th of July weekend. And if you want to track some of Christian Wild's work, myheartbook.com. Catholic Archbishop Paul Coakley, the head of the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, has condemned a scheduled black mass by a satanic group for which tickets are being sold at the Oklahoma City Civic Center. He calls it sacrilegious, blasphemous, a mockery of the Mass. The Archbishop also called upon community leaders and board members of the Oklahoma City Civic Center to remedy this situation, stressing that he hoped that they did not want to enable or encourage such a flagrantly inflammatory event. The Black Mass of Oklahoma, scheduled to take place at the Civic Center Music Hall September 21st, the tickets they're selling, $15. Water. Next time you drink it, think about tonight, because it might not be what you think it is. Gerald Pollack joins us next. The Fourth Phase of Water. That's the name of one of his books, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to our pre-Independence Day program. Professor Gerald Pollack is a founding editor-in-chief of a scientific journal called Water, and is recognized as an international leader in science and engineering. He's a founding fellow of the American Institute of Medical and Biological Engineering and a fellow of both the American Heart Association and Biomedical Engineering Society as well. He's got several books out there, one, of course, being The Fourth Phase of Water, Beyond Solid, Liquid, and Vapor. Gerald, welcome to Coast to Coast. And
thanks so much, George. It's great to be with you.
Tell me about your interest in water. This is not something you wake up and say, I'm going to start studying this. Tell me about this.
No, it's not. I want to start by saying that many of the things that you mentioned a few minutes ago touch really squarely on water. The fracking involves water. Hurricane Arthur involves water. And I think it's possible that that for Alzheimer's and many, many other diseases, there may be something in water that can help bring a cure. But we were studying muscles for many years. How do your muscles shorten? How do they contract? And we found it really strange that many of the ideas that people, that scientists are thinking involve proteins, but they don't involve water. And two-thirds of our muscles are water, and it seemed really strange that two-thirds of the volume of what makes up muscle has apparently nothing to do with the contractile process. It's actually even more strange than that, because You know, the water molecule is so small that to make up that two-thirds volume, you need an awful lot of water molecules. So it turns out that if you count molecules instead of volume, that more than 99% of your molecules are water molecules. And yet, the textbooks say that water has nothing to do with all these processes. So we became really interested, because how could it be that 99% of your molecules don't really do anything but sit and bathe the more important, quote-unquote, molecules of life? That's how it all started.
Because we are made up of so much water, when there's a full moon, that gravitational pull on everything, including us, does that explain why some people act very strange during a full moon period?
Good question. I'm not sure. There certainly could be some kind of electrostatic pull on water. We put water in a little chamber, and we put some charge on a rod right just above it, and we can find a little blip. The water is coming toward the rod. And it's possible that when the moon is just in the right position, this affects our water the way that water is affected in the laboratory. You might be right. This could have something to do with it, because the water inside our body is absolutely critical for everything we do. It's totally central for all of life. This has been known for so long, but just forgotten. You might be onto something.
Yeah, I think so. There's something there. And I have found, too, Gerald, that in the morning, if I don't drink a couple glasses of water to get going, I feel sluggish. I feel like, you know, I'm off kilter a little bit. Does that have something to do with it, the lack of having enough water in your system?
Totally. You're right on. Most of us are dehydrated. We don't know that we're dehydrated. Our cells are just full of water. The water is critical for everything we do. If you don't have enough of the water, you feel sluggish. You feel like something is wrong. One of the things that we found is that, you know, we found a new phase of water, we used to think that water has a solid and a liquid and a vapor, and we found actually there's a fourth one. It's in between a liquid and a solid, and this is the stuff that fills our bodies, that fills our cells. And if you don't have enough of it, if you wake up in the morning and you haven't had your two glasses of water, you may be deficient, you may be dehydrated. And when you're dehydrated, all your cells are not working to capacity. If they're not working to capacity, you need to drink some more water. The truth is that the water actually has energy. You know, if you played a few rounds of tennis and you're tired, worn out, you just can't do anything. You sit down, you take a couple glasses of water, and then you're back to it again.
Yeah.
So why is that? Well, we found experimentally that the water actually can contain variable amounts of energy, and you need this energy in order to get going. So you're right, absolutely, the water's critical. We don't even know that we're dehydrated, but many of us are. Kids know it because they get thirsty. People who start to get some gray hair, they also need the water, even more so, but their senses are not quite as acute. And so they really don't understand that they're thirsty. Hydration is absolutely critical. So may I tell you about Dr. Batman?
Dr. Batman?
Batman. Actually,
like Batman. Okay.
Like Batman.
All right. Tell me about it.
Well, his name is not really Batman, but it starts with Batman. It's Batman Galej or something like that. And Batman, Dr. Batman, was a supporter of the Shah of Iran. When the Shah was deposed, Batman went to prison, as you might expect, as a political prisoner. So there were many other political prisoners there, and since Batman was the doctor, the only doctor, everybody relied on Batman to take care of them. So what did he have at his disposal? He didn't have the latest pharmaceuticals. He had water. So no matter what the problem, he told his colleagues in prison to drink water. Well, it turned out to be remarkable. It turned out that many of those pathologies would basically vanish if they would drink enough water. So when he got out into his practice, again, he studied water, just drinking a lot of water, no matter what your problem is. He wrote a book. The book is called You're Not Sick, You're Thirsty. The book, I'm told by his son, who I met by chance on a plane, sold more than 1 million copies. And it's very popular and it's cheap. And the book describes patients who came to him with diabetes, with cancer, with this and with that. And in all cases, he told them to drink water, drink a lot of water. And he speaks of how many of them were actually cured of their problem simply by drinking a lot of water.
Interesting. You know, we talk about Lourdes in France and how it has these medicinal properties. You know, it's supposed to be basically holy water, that if you have an illness and you bathe in it or you drink from it, you're going to get better. Again, another story where water has some incredible properties.
Yeah, it's not only Lourdes, but of course there are many other sites, and I've seen some evidence about the water from Lourdes specifically. And you know, I organize annual meetings on water, scientific meetings on water, and people come from all over, and very interesting stuff. Two or three years ago, somebody took some samples of the water from Lourdes and made many kinds of measurements, physical, chemical measurements, to see if this is really different from ordinary water. Totally different. And so were the waters from the Ganges and several other places. And one of the interesting things, of course, that I was looking for, because we knew about this fourth phase of water, which I can tell you about in a few minutes,
sure.
But we wanted, because we think it has medicinal value, so I was curious to see if it had it. And there's some distinguishing feature of the water that we look for. It's a kind of, it's an absorption of light at a particular wavelength of, it's in the ultraviolet, 270 nanometers. And sure enough, right on, I almost jumped out of my seat. I saw it. It was there in spades, a great big peak. And so did the other waters from Ganges and other places. So I think it's possible that the reason this stuff is medicinal or holy water is not because it's just H2O. You know, H2O is H2O. It's boring. This fourth phase is so interesting, and it has so many interesting properties, one of which is that if you drink it, this fourth phase of water, it replaces the fourth phase of water that fills your cells. So in that way, it can help promote medicinal value,
yeah,
or promote healing. I think that may be the secret.
Gerald, do you think in some strange way water is alive?
The idea that water is alive came from Victor Schauberger. Schauberger was, he wasn't a scientist, he was a naturalist. And he studied water. He lived in Austria, and he died around the 1950s or so. In the 1930s and 40s, in the forest, he spent a lot of time just looking at the water. And he claimed that the water that flows and around bends and has vortices and such is living water. And water that was stagnant, just standing there, is dead water. Dead water is not good for you. The living water gives you vitality. At the time,
interesting.
Yeah, there were. It is interesting. There were no scientific studies to validate this. It was just his feeling that that was the case. And now it seems to be so because people have been studying the same kind of vortices that occur naturally. You can see them as the river flows, especially past rocks and there are eddies. And people are studying this, and it seems that this water has some properties that differ from the properties of ordinary water. So it does have a kind of vitality to it.
I had Dr. Masaru Emoto in my studio several years ago, Gerald, talking about his incredible work of water and the kind of music that you play at it. And then, of course, he froze the water and took a sliced sample, looked at it under a microscope. And I've got to tell you, the results were absolutely amazing. Music that one would consider to be pleasant, the water would just have this beautiful crystallized look to it. And then music that some people would deem loud and noisy, the water was all, you know, scattered all over the place. And under a microscope, it looked like it was in a state of panic. An incredible experiment.
Absolutely incredible experiment. He's done so many of these experiments. And by the way, he's coming to our water meeting this year in Bulgaria in November.
You're having a water meeting?
Well, yeah, water, we do this annually. And
For any of your listeners who might be interested, it's the URL is waterconf, that's waterconf.org. And there are lots of really interesting people who come and...
Hold on for a second, Gerald. We've already hit the break, but we'll come back and talk more about Dr. Emoto, and then we'll get into what you call the fourth phase of water. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Gerald Pollack with us, the professor. Gerald, we were talking about Dr. Emoto's experiments, and what do you think causes that? I mean, it's almost as if water has memory or knowledge.
Water clearly has memory. Whether it has knowledge is another issue. And, you know, for many years, people were skeptical of the idea that water had memory because, you know, we think of water as being randomly oriented and distributed molecules. And how can a bunch of these random molecules possibly store information? And that's where the fourth phase comes in, because the fourth phase is not random. It's ordered. The molecules are ordered in a three-dimensional, very specific array. And when you've got an array like that, it's possible, just like a computer memory, that you can store information. And so the idea that it's impossible to store information in water evaporates. Now, there have been dozens of experiments done, really serious experiments done, some very beautifully and some provocatively by a lot of different people, including, well, you know, if you start with Emoto, Emoto is not a scientist, he's a spiritualist. His contributions are amazing. And although it looks as though there haven't been any systematic studies, it's not quite true because, I mean, it's easy, for example, if you take some ice crystals, you can easily pick out one that you think is a great example of one that's beautiful and one that's another example of one that's not beautiful. But it seems that someone else has demonstrated that actually it's really pretty objective, that you can easily distinguish between the ugly ones and the beautiful ones. And the beautiful ones, as you say, are if you play a Bach cantata, then you get very lovely ice crystal. And if you play hard rock, then you get an ugly ice crystal. It seems to be true. And I think it comes from the fact that sound of various sorts and also electromagnetic energy, both of them impact the water. And they mainly impact this fourth phase of water. And this phase of water, the one that I mentioned earlier, is what you need to convert to ice. We found that when you try to freeze water, you don't go from water to ice. You go from water to the fourth phase to ice.
And explain that phase then.
Okay, so that phase. So the phase occurs when water sits right next to some surface. It could be an extensive surface. It could be the surface of a molecule. The surface needs to be so-called hydrophilic, that is water-loving. And most surfaces are like that. So when water meets the surface, its structure changes extraordinarily. Every physical chemical feature differs. It's not even H2O anymore. We found, and this is detailed in the book, we found that it's H3O2. It's an ordered structure, and this order extends not by just one or two molecular layers, but millions of molecular layers. A huge amount of that water undergoes this change. Now, there are two features of this that are really interesting. The first is that this phase is negatively charged, and the water beyond is positively charged. And so it's like a battery. You know, you have negative charge in this phase and positive charge in the water beyond. And you can actually extract energy current from that. We've done it, and you can actually light an LED with it. It's quite simple. And the second feature is that, and this is the important one for many phenomena in nature, is that, you know, you need energy to create current and electrical energy. You can't get it from nothing or nowhere, because that would be equivalent to a perpetual motion machine, which doesn't exist. So where does the energy come from? We struggled with this thing for a few years, and finally it turns out very simple. It comes from light. And so the light comes in, the light, the photons.
Does it jumpstart it?
You might say jumpstart, but it's more that it powers it. It's like gasoline. It just keeps powering it and building it. I wouldn't say jumpstart. The more light you have, the more of this fourth phase that you get. But we found it's not just light that does it. It appears that sound also can do it. And so then we go back to Emoto's ice crystals. We found that the sound can impact the water in many ways. It changes this fourth phase. So I think it's possible that Emoto's results are explained because the sounds of the music impact this fourth phase. And when the fourth phase converts directly to ice, it's a different kind of ice crystal. I think that could be the explanation for what's going on, although it needs to be tested. I'm an academic, you know, and it always needs to be tested and checked.
I've always been told, too, that when you drink water, it's got to be a certain pH level. Even put some, baking soda in there if you have to.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who are drinking so-called alkaline water that is high pH. It seems that this water is good for your health. When you have water like that, it has a lot of OH minus groups, negative charges.
Mm-hmm.
Your cell is the same way. Your cell's got a lot of negativity in it. If you measure the electrical potential inside the cell, it's negative. And so it makes sense that if you drink water with this kind of negativity, with high pH, you're going to be drinking what your cells love. And so it makes sense. So in Japan, there are many companies who sell this water, and sometimes they're not particularly cheap. The units that produce it sell for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000. But in Japan, they conducted clinical trials, and they found that for people who have gastrointestinal issues of any kind, this water is amazing. And so the health service in Japan has actually approved it. So anybody who goes to a clinic or to the hospital in Japan complaining of any kind of gastrointestinal issue gets this water right away. And the government pays for it. So I haven't seen myself the details of the clinical studies, but my colleague who was involved, my Japanese colleague, told me that the studies have been really extensive. So you're right. So the pH of the water does seem to matter. And it seems that if you drink water with high pH, it's better for you than water with low pH, which, by the way, kills bacteria.
and cancer cannot live in an acidic environment.
Well, yeah, I've heard that true. In fact, there's a book written by a guy who dealt with pH and cancer. Perhaps you know it. His name is Emilio Revici.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know. He had a therapy that brought the pH back to whatever the normal level was. And cancer patients often had pH. Sometimes, actually, they were too high and too low. But bringing those pH values back to a normal turned out to be amazing. There was a testimonial in back of the book, and it was written by the former director of the Sloan Kettering Cancer Research Institute. And I could almost remember the quote verbatim. It said, "You know, the patients walk into his office dead and walk out alive." So pH is really important.
Yeah, it sure is. I'm going to take you back to the biblical days for a moment, Gerald. The moment that Jesus walked on water. What was that all about?
Okay. So we studied the surface of the water. It turns out that the surface of the water is filled with this fourth phase of water. The fourth phase is very viscous. It's kind of stiff. Water is known to have a high surface tension, and it's not just the top molecular layer of water. It's many, many, many layers consisting of this fourth phase. And you can see videos, for example, if you look on the internet, there's a lizard that walks on water. It's called, as you might guess, the Jesus Christ lizard, because the Jesus Christ lizard walks on water just the way we imagine maybe Jesus walked on water. So it is possible under certain conditions, I would suppose, maybe extreme conditions, that even humans could conceivably walk on water. Well, certainly if the lizards walk on water, it's not too far a cry. So that reminds me of another story about the splitting of the Red Sea, since you talked about...
Good point.
Pardon?
That's a good point. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So we're told that the Red Sea split and Moses walked across, and no problem. Of course, we think this is a legend, and it's impossible that the sea can split. However, there's an experiment that shows that the sea can split, and I saw this experiment demonstrated some years ago by a Japanese colleague from Tokyo University. He took a trough of water, a tank of water. He put the red dye in it, so it looked like the Red Sea. Behind this trough of water was a magnet, a superconducting magnet. He turned on the magnet, and the sea split. You could walk right across it. It was really, really amazing.
Then how did Moses know this?
Well, that part is difficult to say, and the conditions under which this happened, at least the conditions under which it was demonstrated, it was a very high magnetic field, and so we have magnetic fields, but we don't have high magnetic fields. But it's possible, you know, that there was some cataclysm, some atmospheric or cosmic cataclysm that transiently caused a high magnetic field. And if you could demonstrate it in the laboratory, why couldn't it happen in reality? So it is possible. I wasn't there, but, you know, maybe it really did happen.
The region of the Bermuda Triangle, whether it's supernatural or not, there are a lot of people who say that somehow there are bubbles that come up from beneath, and they literally could take down a ship. It's like a dead zone. What is that?
Well, I think it's possible. So I mentioned to you that about that the top of the water that interfaces with the air is kind of stiff. You know, and if you have bubbles coming from below, like from methane gas, is going to disrupt this structure on the top, and the top becomes soft. It doesn't retain the kind of stiffness that it has. You know, in Finland, for example, the ski jumpers, they like to practice all year round. The Finns are very conscientious, and they want to do something when they have no snow. So they have a ski jump, and they land in the water instead of where they would usually land, but unless something is done to the surface of the water, they can break their neck when they land. And so what they do is they bubble the water from beneath. That breaks the surface tension, and then they land with impunity. They don't break their bones, and so it's safe and they can do it. So the same thing is possible. You know, you have a ship that's sailing in certain areas where these methane gases are coming up, and the methane gases coming up are softening the sea. And, the ship... Of course, we all know Archimedes' principle that helps support the ship, but there's something else that helps support it too. This kind of stiff surface at the top is also helping to support the ship. And if you eliminate the stiffness, then it's possible that the ship can
goes down. Right down.
It goes right down, and you wouldn't even. It just goes right down, right sinking right to the bottom, and no debris, nothing.
It's like a hole.
Like a hole in the water, yeah. Exactly.
Some people have talked about, Gerald, a green mist around the Bermuda Triangle area, even up there in the clouds where planes have seen it. What might that be?
Good question. I haven't thought about that, but if this methane gas or other gases are rising up, then they're likely to interact with whatever is in the atmosphere, like water, for example, and The atmosphere is really, the water in the atmosphere is not the way most of us think. Most of us think that water in the atmosphere consists of single molecules of water that have evaporated. It's simply not true. We showed in the book, we show experiments that demonstrate that when water evaporates, it evaporates actually in little clusters, or I should say clusters containing gazillions of molecules, and these things rise up, and that's what actually makes for the humidity in the atmosphere, and these droplets consist of, have shells of the fourth phase of water. These shells fluoresce. If you have gas coming up, and the gas combines with these, it's possible that that could be the reason for the green mist that you're talking about. Just a speculation.
Sure.
I'm not sure that that's true, but it's just simply it's one of many ideas that might explain it.
Tsunamis, incredible power with water. Have you looked at those at all?
Well, we've talked about them, and it's also discussed in the book. And you know, most of us think of the water as being a viscous kind of substance, and viscous substances, if you generate some kind of transient pressure, they'll damp out pretty quickly. It's like the extreme example would be honey, right? And so you pound your fist on the honey and you get a little wave and it peters out pretty quickly. Well, the water is less viscous than that, but still it should peter out. But these tidal waves, these tsunamis don't peter out. They just keep going. Sometimes they travel all around the world several times, before they actually damp out. So in order to understand this, it can't be viscous. It must be elastic. If you have an elastic band, a very stiff elastic band, and you tap it, the wave can travel over huge distances without damping out. And so you really need, in order to explain what's going on in the tsunami, you need to have a kind of elastic surface. And that's exactly what this fourth phase is. It's elastic. And I think this is the reason why tsunamis can propagate over huge distances, because the surface, in fact, is elastic. It's not viscous.
If people want to, I guess, ingest water, drink water in a better way, what do you recommend they do?
What do you mean by a better way?
Well, instead of the tap.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, good question. So the tap, we don't know exactly what's in the tap. The tap is full of pharmaceuticals, poisons, what have you. My colleagues, we haven't studied this, but my colleagues claim almost uniformly, the colleagues who have studied this, that the fluoride is poison, the chlorine is poison, and we drink this all the time. So we really don't want to drink stuff that we think about foods. We're very particular about the foods we eat, but we should be equally particular about the water we drink, because that water is us. In fact, we have more water than we have other kinds of mass. So the water is really critical what you drink. And we would like to do a study. There are many people who sell different kinds of water, and they claim that these waters have health benefits. And I think some of them do. I've seen some evidence that some of these waters can actually reverse pathologies. Just as I mentioned Dr. Batman, if you drink the right kind of water, it appears that it can seriously reverse pathologies and quickly. There are so many of these. We don't really know as consumers which ones are good and which ones are not so good. We don't know if they're snake oil or if they're real. What needs to be done seriously is objective studies that look at these various waters that are touted to have all these health benefits, look at them comparatively and see which ones really have the health benefits. This is really critical to do. We'd like to do it. It requires $4 or $5 million to do it. And, you know, the U.S., the sources of research are mostly tied up with the pharmaceutical companies, and they're very happy to do clinical trials on some new drug for Alzheimer's or what have you. But the idea of spending money through $1 million to test water is out of the question. So it's really difficult to get funds to do this, but it's desperately needed, because it appears, I think it's possible that waters, certain types of water, can be the wonder drug of the future. No side effects, but healing effects. We just need to study it. I wish I could say drink water X or drink water Y, but I'm not sure at the moment. I just know that there's something there, but needs to be studied.
If people want more information, Gerald, on what you do, what do you recommend, and where do we get your books?
The books are, of course, there's always Amazon. The best place, I think, is our publisher is Ebner & Sons, EbnerAndSons. .com. They're all there, and you can check the reviews there. Most of them are pretty nice. There's a lot of material inside.
All right, Gerald, we're going to take phone calls next hour with our listeners for you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.